This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, this is Donna Shapley. Welcome as we wrap up reading from the April issue of Cincinnati Magazine. Today I would like to start in front lines with Speak Easy. Tunde Wei cooks up conversations. Food often articulates cultural perspectives through where it's available, how much it costs, who it's served to, and who is serving, says writer and chef Tunde Wei. The Taft Museum of Art's 2024 Duncanson Artist in Residence. The native of Nigeria, the program's very first chef artist, will host public programs which ran from April 13th through the 27th, starting with an opening reception at the museum. You're notably not traditionally trained as a chef, so how did food come to be part of your personal story, as well as your work? I lucked into opening up a restaurant in Detroit at a time when the city's food scene was burgeoning. I was part of a class of folks using food to showcase the city differently. I never looked back. At what point did you realize food was an ideal medium for you to convey critical insight and political commentary? I always knew food was more than nutrition. It's a cultural product, a social artifact. Food spaces overtook other forms of retail as convening spaces and entertainment destinations, and chefs were elevated artists and treated with deference. If food could articulate cultural perspectives, it could also be a vehicle for critical commentary. As you work at the intersection of food and politics, what socio-political concerns are top of mind? The allocation and accumulation of capital in Cincinnati, there are billions of dollars applied to different returns, seeking regimen or investments. How much of that is extractive? And how much of that expands opportunities for working class folks? But questions in Cincinnati are not exclusive to Cincinnati. These are global questions with local manifestations. Why is food such a powerful tool for starting important conversations? Because it's a common and intimate experience everyone shares. Sharing food can allow for more vulnerability so that realizations are revealed, breakthroughs are realized, or at least our differences are properly established. This was brought to us by Rodney Wilson. Still in front lines, we'll turn to Dr. No, KNOW. First question to Dr. No. Like many generations of Cincinnatians, I grieve the closing of the cupboard on Short Vine. I haven't visited in a while, but the smell lingers, in a good way. The many stories I see now about the place, though, seem contradictory. Please give us a reliable timeline of that famous address, signed, "Roll Another One." Doctor's answer, "Dear Roll, first sunlight pool, and now this." Surprisingly, the humble one-story building at 2613 Short Vine was first built in 1935 as a modest Kroger. But it found its legs in 1940 as Corey's 5 cents to a dollar store, selling bits of everything into the mid-1960s. Then, just as America welcomed Sgt. Pepper, hippies, and WEBN, the cupboard burst open with new and provocative delights crammed to the rafters. Navy engineers, having to make use of every square inch in submarines, clearly took lessons from the store's staff. Described variously as a mod gift shop, head shop, and public nuisance, the cupboard was busted almost immediately, and then relentlessly. Two generations of family proprietors spent countless months and dollars in courtrooms fighting for your right to buy baby pacifiers shaped like penises. Also, bongs, pipes, whipping it, 2-0 cartridges, raunchy toys, etc. Cincinnati Magazine published a deep dive into its history in February 2019. High times at the cupboard. If you'd like to find out more, whether your opinion of the cupboard was whip it bad or whip it good, you had to respect its long-term survival. Let us all raise a glass, pipe, to its cloudy memory, or a gummy. Peace out. Next question. I got one of those free luncheon invitations in the mail. It's from a cremation service, and it's being held at the West Chester Smoky Bones Restaurant. A seminar about cremation at Smoky Bones? Please find out if this was intentional or clueless. Signed, Smoked Out. The doctor's answer, "Dear Smoked," readers who can easily find an answer to their question from an obvious source, such as the phone number on your mailer, will sometimes hesitate, perhaps lacking the time or the courage. They seem to assume that the doctor has an abundance of both. Perhaps they are correct, because the doctor called. A thoroughly courteous and professional woman answered. Each of us played our roles well. She trying to direct the conversation toward registering for the luncheon, and the doctor dodging her moves while playing coy about the real reason for his call. When we finally arrived at the awkward issue of a cremation seminar being paired with the name Smoky Bones, she revealed that she was just a call center employee in Halifax, Nova Scotia. She could only cheerfully guess that whoever conjoined the luncheon with the cremation company lacked the time or the courage to note the awkwardness. So it goes. Be sure to let us know if you receive an invitation for a free seminar about erectile dysfunction being held at Dick's. Sometime back, you wrote about the Chatfield Memorial, a Walnut Hills site showing on Google Maps that doesn't really exist. I drive past that corner daily, Columbia Parkway and Kemper Lane. And there's construction going on now. Maybe something is finally happening. Signed, Un Memoriam. The doctor's reply, Dear Un, the doctor regrets to inform you that you have things backwards. The Chatfield Memorial definitely existed. It was built in 1933 to honor Frederick Chatfield, a major supporter of Cincinnati Park development, who had died suddenly. Its benches and landscaping looked out on a majestic view of the Ohio River. But the 1938 construction of Columbia Parkway, well, it paved paradise, as they say. Our July 2018 column saw the doctor trespassing inside the totally overgrown area and finding scant remains among the litter and mattresses. Despite the site's abandonment many decades ago, Google Maps has displayed the name at Columbia Parkway and Kemper Lane since they launched in 2005, and won't stop. Your query sent the doctor there again. Readers seem to enjoy this kind of armchair sadism. But new apartment construction has now wiped away every trace of whatever may have once been there. The on-site workers never heard of any Chatfield Memorial and seemed unconcerned, apparently never having seen the movie Poltergeist. Try stopping by some afternoon and see what happens when you yell, "They're here!" And that concludes Dr. No, who is Jay Gilbert, radio personality and advertising prankster. Submit your questions about the city's peculiarities to drno@cincinnatimagazine.com. Next, we'll turn to Dine, Off the Menu, Slow Motion, Examining Cincinnati's Slow Food Movement by Brandon Wusky. It's getting harder and harder every day to try and do the right thing, laments Paul Picton, owner of Maverick Chocolate Company, during a recent meeting of the Cincinnati chapter of Slow Food USA. For his business, that means importing organic cane sugar from Brazil. What most people don't realize is that white sugar is rarely vegetarian friendly. Because of a wood shortage, it's usually filtered through bone char, burnt cow bones. Picton pays a high tariff, 0.16 cents per pound, for the sugar he imports. Few are aware of this aspect of chocolate making, but like everyone involved in slow food, Picton wants to educate people. The grassroots organization's goals are to teach Americans about food sourcing, production, and labor practices, to defend food's biological and cultural diversity, and to influence food policy in the public and private sectors. Such efforts reflect Slow Food's motto of good, clean, and fair food for all. The international movement started in 1986 when McDonald's opened a location in Rome near the historic Spanish Steps. When America's archetypical corporate giant opens an outpost in one of old Europe's most iconic spots, it's bound to draw protesters. In this case, the protests turned festive. Activists prepared pasta and passed it out to onlookers while chanting a slogan that translated to, "We don't want fast food. We want slow food." Fast forward 38 years, and Slow Food International is active in more than 160 countries, and Slow Food USA has chapters in more than 80 cities. Cincinnati's chapter, established about 10 years ago, works to educate consumers about the food they eat and to support and promote businesses that align with the movement's values. One of the most salient ways they promote said businesses is by handing out the Snail of Approval Awards, according to Eduardo Rodriguez, Cincinnati chapter president. The awards recognize businesses, including restaurants, farms, and food artisans, like Blue Oven Bakery, that embody the movement's motto. In this case, good refers to businesses that provide wholesome, flavorful food. Clean means the business practices organic and sustainable methods of sourcing and slash or growing. And fair means that the business offers fair wages, treats employees with respect, treats animals with respect, and gives back to the community. One of the first local Snail of Approval recipients was the Wildflower Cafe and Wine Shop in Mason. "I've got the snail sticker on my door," says Wildflower's owner, Todd Hudson. "It's the only award I care about because it's legit." Slow Food USA goes to great lengths to ensure that recipients aren't merely paying lip service to concepts like local sourcing and organic farming. "They came out to inspect the restaurant," Hudson recalls. "They even went in the walk-in and checked inventory." For him, working closely with local organic farmers doesn't just ensure sustainability. It ensures a richer, tastier product. The beauty of farm-to-table is that when you eat food that is grown in healthy soil, it has more nutrient density, Hudson adds. As with wine, nutrients equal flavor. To ensure a more flavorful Cincinnati, the local chapter offers several events and classes throughout the year. Recently, Mom and M Coffee and Wine hosted an event called Slow Grain, where John Brandstrater of Brandstrater Farm in Clarksville, Ohio, discussed regenerative agriculture, that is, using organic farming methods to restore spent soil, a key tenet of the slow food movement, and displayed a few varieties of his heritage wheat and cornmeal with Mom and M owner Tony Ferrari and team crafting a tasting menu out of Brandstrater's products. You've probably seen the words heirloom and heritage on product labels and restaurant menus. The terms refer to plants or livestock that were developed before the advent of industrialized farming and genetic modification. They're much rarer than their factory-farmed counterparts and, not surprisingly, tend to be richer in nuance, nutrients, and flavor. Slow Food International identifies and preserves such varieties through its The Ark of Taste catalog. More than 6,200 foods are identified, with the U.S. contributing 386 of them. Ohio contributions include the Buckeye Chicken, developed by Mrs. Nettie Metcalf of Warren in the 1890s. Part catalog, part chronicle, The Ark of Taste tells the story of the world's most endangered food products. Climate change, deforestation, industrial farming, as well as less ominous factors like migration and changes in consumption, continue at a rapid clip, endangering more and more foods. Which is why Cincinnati's Slow Food chapter presses on with new ways to educate and inform, such as plans for a slow wine tasting at Taste on Elm and Conserva, a baking class based on sustainable grains at Cincinnati State's Midwest Culinary Institute, and a December event to coincide with Terra Madre Day, a celebration of slow food. The group also has plans to educate some of our youngest producers and consumers. Rothenburg Preparatory Academy in Over the Rhine has a rooftop garden where board member Annie-Laurie Blair volunteers several times a month. Ferrari occasionally teaches cooking classes using produce found in the garden. Latoya Bridgman from Cooking for the Family works with local nonprofit La Soupe to teach similar classes to the parents. The board members' passion for the movement is palpable. Well aware of the challenges, members realize that changing our city's often toxic relationship to food will take some time. The best things always do. And that concludes one of the articles, Slow Motion, Examining Ants Slow Food Movement by Brandon Wuski. Next up, High Spirits, Tree of Life. Ever seen a bar with a giant fake tree in the middle? Hidden above Flying Axes in Covington, the dimly lit second-story cocktail spot with a rooftop patio strikes a balance between an intimate date joint and your next party site. There's hardly a single item on this seasonal menu you could classify as basic, keeping with the bar's name. Even traditional drinks here are like watching a reboot of your favorite series that ends up being better than you expected. For example, a Tom Collins, normally made with gin, sugar, lemon juice, and club soda, was done up with whiskey, maple syrup, and orange juice and called the Spiced Sage Collins instead. And there's plenty of original works too. Just look to crowd favorites like the Gem City 2, made with vodka, kiwi, pistachio, coconut, and lime, or the Mother Earth, a tequila-based cocktail of mezcal, pineapple, matcha syrup, agave, and lime. The decor and seating is the real highlight, though, expertly arranged in a way that makes the space feel open enough to host a big group, yet full of intimate nooks and crannies to sneak in a bit of PDA with a romantic partner. After one night here, you'll be wanting to return for your own second story, and maybe a third, fourth, or fifth. Tree of Life was brought to us by Kane Mitten. Next up, Tableside with Brian Sprance. New Riff, R-I-F-F, Distilling's first master distiller, focuses on making world-class whiskey. You started out as a beer guy, right? After 15 years in the brewing industry, I was starting to feel a little burned out. In 2013, I was given the opportunity to sit and talk with Ken Lewis and Jay Erisman about their vision for New Riff. They were specifically looking for a brewer who had a mix of small and big brewery experience, and building something from the ground up was too good an opportunity to pass up. How does your expertise in fermentation apply to the distillation process? The distilling process doesn't necessarily create the flavors, but instead amplifies the flavors created in the cooking and fermentation process. Everything starts with quality raw materials, consistent mashing techniques, and consistent fermentation profiles. We pay attention to our fermenter temperatures, PHS, alcohol content, sugar content. Our focus is quality, quality, quality. And what does it mean to you to be named Master Distiller? The recognition from my coworkers and peers in the industry has been amazing. It was pretty exciting seeing how excited the company was as a whole. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished in the last 10 years and hope to make everyone even more proud in the next 10 years. Tableside with Brian Sprance was brought to us by Aisha D. Little. And with that, we have come to concluding our reading from the April issue of Cincinnati Magazine. This is Donna Shapley thanking you so very much for being with me today and all month, and inviting you back next week when we'll begin reading from the May issue of Cincinnati Magazine.